当然，我哋可以有时间就去个大自然里边，我哋除咗个鞋啊，喺嗰啲草地行走下咁样样咧，就可以做到个接地气。但系城市人工作咁繁忙嘅时候咧，咁其实而家市面上咧已经系有一啲接地气嘅产品咧，咁喺我哋嘅健康店咧，已经一路咧有好多嘅客人咧就系买咗翻去屋企度咧，就每一日都可以接受到呢个接地气嘅治疗啦。接地气产品咧可以喺我哋六创意嘅健康店可以买到噶啦，联络电话系2882-4848。
以下节目内容纯属主持及嘉宾个人意见，与本台立场无关。
Actually, we still have almost 30 minutes for Q&A, so let's invite our guests come back again. So, Julia, Nancy, Zhou, and Danny. Okay, so four of you. Okay, and Toh is on his way. We have 10 minutes here with us, so if you have any questions for him, maybe ask him first, so then he can leave in 10 minutes.And please use your mic when you answer the phone, all right? Because they're still taping the program. Yes, Angela, yes, please.
I want to ask Toh, that's okay, this one's working now. I want to ask you about what it was like when you changed from the corporate world to, you know, to become the founder of this organization. And I presume,know, going from a life where you get paid money every day for the work you do to a very different type of life. I'm wondering what that was like psychologically, and also if you would have any advice about making that type of transition.
Actually, I didn't, it wasn't a big decision. A lot of people thought it was a big decision. Because I actually thought that I could always go back to make money. So I still can, but I think it's not necessary because I think before doing so, I have, like many people, think that, oh, I need this much money to retire, I need this much money to live, but at the end, as I said, I met a lot of people who are, you know, poorer, but very happy. So I also realized that you don't need really that much money to retire, or you don't need a lot of money.To live happily. So, but I'm not saying that everyone should do that, but it's just that we can balance. A lot of people now, I see very, like a lot of my friends are doing a lot on the wealth pursuit.Of wealth side, but there's very little that they are doing in pursuit of happiness. And I think that we people can balance more on the other side. And do we really need another bag? Do we really need another a bigger place to live? You know, people could live happily with very little.
So there's no struggle from your spouse, your family?
Well, luckily, I don't have children myself. And now I have 20,000 kids. So it's a good karma.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Well, I feel an urge to ask Danny a blunt question. Maybe you think it's a very silly one, but I thought from what we understand about you and your work, you should be the most qualified man in Hong Kong to answer my question. The question is very simple. How can one make more money by working less and live a happier life?
Good question. I think it's about alignment, like I said. There is this misconception or belief that to make money, you need to work very hard.And I meet a lot of people who work 18 hours a day, but they still don't make money. I meet a lot of spiritual practitioners who are giving away a lot of things, but they don't make money. Yeah? So I think it's about, number one, being in alignment with what you want. You know, how much money do you really want? Do you think what you're doing can produce that money or not? So it's about being a co-creator, about the saying my service is valued enough to generate that amount of income that we want. Right? So in a nutshell, that's how I would say. So again, it's all about emotional success. If you emotionally believe that your work can create that income, it will create it. If you emotionally don't believe, it's not going to create it. You know, you can work for 20 hours a day more.
That's exactly what you meant by emotional alignment.
Yes. That's absolutely right. And that's just not money. You know, it's, you know, people always associate success with money. But you got to look at seven areas, which is, you know, the financial success, you look at your career, you look at your health and well-being, you look at fun and recreation. People don't have fun these days so much as well. So you incorporate that, you incorporate relationships, your personal growth, and also contribution to society. So I think it's like bringing your best self to work every day, as opposed to just focusing on success equals money. It's like bringing your best self. Yeah, does that answer your question? All right, thank you.
Just want to catch Chung before you leave. This is a question for you all. Thank you so much for the wonderful life stories, really touching every one of you. Could you share in your lowest time, in your darkest hour, what did you tell yourself that brought you back to your own field? That one thing you told yourself.
The one thing is, I'm doing this for myself, which is true. I think I reminded, at one point I was very down, partly because of all the human suffering that I saw, but also the hardship, because, you know, I've never been too used to squatting toilets in the villages, also no flushing, and one winter, it was about Chinese New Year. I was also born around that time. So in the past, I usually would spend the time with my family. But it was a very cold winter. I was in a bus, a public minivan, and it was very cold at night, and I was rushing from one village to another area. And then I, you know, asked myself, why am I doing this? You know, why I have... my sister, my family, you know, waiting for me to spend Chinese New Year with, and then I'm more alone here doing this. But then I told myself that I'm doing this for myself, which is true. You know, no one forced me to do this, and then I became happier.
And I think I'm going to go with the first one that came to my mind, because I have somewhere I'm in a dangerous situation, running from somebody in Thailand and running through quicksand and almost drowning in quicksand. But I'm not going to go there. But I think for me, a moment that was really challenging was, you all know we had SARS.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had worked so hard, so hard to finally make income in arts therapy. And so I was now working in a practice, we were just all set up, still running around doing crazy things, but I was actually making good income for the first time. And then when SARS hit, obviously no one was leaving the house and no one was coming. And so I'd show up and, you know, first month, I was like, okay, you know, it's going to pass, we're going to be okay. Month two, no one's coming. And I knew enough that by month three, if I didn't have any, I would have to just, I don't know, I would be homeless, because I didn't have anyone to give me money and I invested everything into this. The reality was something was to happen or I'm going to be out of a job homeless because I don't have any money now. So I had a client who was I had two clients coming to see me, and this one client, she was finished, like, with her work. Our work was done. She was much better. And actually, I should be terminating her. In other words, our work should finish. And for one moment, I thought, I need to cling on to her, because I really need that money. I put my head down that night, and I had a really good soul talk to myself. And I cried, and I prayed to God, and I waited to receive that answer. So I let her go, and I trusted. I said, it's in your hands. And I got another side job to help in the meantime. But it was like, just trusting the process that it's going to work out.
Right. Well, that's a very good question, actually, because I experienced a big transition when I started my own business. It was not that I was making a choice between a job and a business. I don't make those kind of choices. I do if I enjoy it, I can do both, or I do one. It's just what I feel right in the moment. But when I started my business, I was on my own, and that was, again, a big financial burden for me, a worry for me. Although I had money I'd saved up, but since I've got a family, I've got 3 daughters, living in Hong Kong isn't easy, and that created a lot of fear. And there were some really low moments in my life, because I was up close and personal with some of my fears about, oh my God, what's going to happen now, what am I going to do, I'm not in that big position anymore, and just all these things. Because when you're in a corporate environment, there's a certain level of conditioning goes on. So I had to unlearn a lot of things when I was on my own. You know, really do all the small stuff, the big stuff, everything. So it was a moment of discomfort and fear as well. Mm-hmm. But fear is like a F-E-A-R, fantasized experience appearing real. Right? So a lot of that is in our mind. And exactly what Julie said, I think at some point you get so frustrated by it that you just surrender. And surrendering is it's a very powerful quality. When you really surrender and say, you know, whatever is going to happen is going to happen for the best. Because the minute you surrender, something happens, and that's called resistance. When you're in fear, what happens is you're always resisting. We think we are fearful, so we are going to do more work, we're going to make more effort, but actually that effort is called resistance. And what you resist persists. So in the moment of surrender, what happens is your resistance towards a particular outcome goes away. So now you are allowing divine intelligence to work through you. And then, because you hear many people say that the minute I gave up, things started falling in place. You hear that many times, don't you? So it's not about the giving up. It's about releasing that resistance. People kind of misconstrue it, thinking that, oh, I gave up and it happened. And actually, it's not about giving up. So giving up, it's about moving, you know, getting yourself out of your way. It's easier said than done, but my advice or my suggestion would be is that when you're working too hard on anything and you feel things are not moving, or when you're in a state of fear, you know, just let go. Just let go. It's easier said than done, but really, just let go. Actually, going to sleep is very good, because slumber breaks down resistance. When you're in deep sleep, your resistance goes down, because your mind is not doing all the negative self-talk about fear. So I would say practicing surrender is a very powerful, powerful thing. Yeah? I hope that helps. Okay.
Well, I don't think I need to add anything to that.
More of the same, really.
Been down, real down. And then up, real up. And I think it was probably about 10 years ago that I was having a conversation with somebody, and she just made a kind of offhand comment, "So you suffer from low-grade depression, do you?" I was like, "No." I got really, really resistant to that. And like Julia, there's a lot, but the one that comes to mind most loudly for me is about a year and a half ago. And I had a big project that didn't really listen to my intuition in the beginning. I was just so excited to have the opportunity. I just jumped in both feet, and things didn't turn out quite well. They turned out the way I thought they would. Surprising. Not the way I hoped they would. So I found myself probably 12 days from eviction. Similar situation, no savings. Finally managed to get myself out of most of my debt. Most of my bills were paid, I believe. But I was really close. And there's like not a cousin or an uncle or a friend or someone I can... And that's just not who I am, to go and say, can I come and sleep on your couch and bring you my two cats in my office, and, you know, because I work from home, so, you know, not like me. And I remember waking up, and I was having... Sleep is vital. And I know that I'm really struggling when I can't sleep. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and I'm really good at getting myself back to sleep, and I could not. So I turned on a light, and I grabbed a notebook out of my bedside table, and I just started writing all the vitriol, all of the really hatred-filled thoughts that I was telling myself. Like, you're so full of shit. You think you're this, you're thinking... And I just wrote it all down, and I slammed the book and had a little magnet on it, so I went into the drawer, and I just left it. And it's like, oh, felt better that I just, first of all, accepted that this was my truth that was going on in my head, and that it was now out. It was now out of me. And then this little rhythm voice came into my mind, and there's a song, Everything's Gonna Be Alright. And I actually started hearing, everything's gonna be alright, everything's gonna be alright. And that's the trust. The trust just came. That's what I heard. So now there are times when I find myself at this place, and as long as I'm willing to accept that this is the truth of my situation in this moment, this little rhythm comes back into my mind again, and it just comes. It's essential for me to just accept that this is where I'm at. And one of the tools that I've come up with now, that I've started to build a nascent, fragile, new sense of self-confidence, is I got this.
Thank you. I have a question for you. In the earlier section, we also talk about, in order for the body, mind, spirit concept to really grow in Hong Kong, we need a lot of collaboration. But my experience as a Chinese practitioner, it seems it's not as easy as it seems to be to collaborate. A lot of time, it seems the trainer, the practitioner, they all like to work on their own. I don't know whether it's Chinese culture or not. How do you feel about, in Hong Kong, do you really see collaboration happening here? And what do you suggest if you see collaboration in your area? Any suggestion you can give to locals? How can we work closely with one another?
We're in a ducking order. I'm trying to live with you with that, because, you know, when I first started here in Hong Kong 25 years ago, I was all alone. I'm really all alone. And but I think what was really important was to find another person who had a shared mission. I think we now live, I'm really into following the human evolution shift. It's very, very strong in my psyche. I believe we're in a very critical time of a huge, huge, huge evolution, human evolution shift as we speak. And I think if we don't come together to work together to bring ease to this distress that's coming, we're going to be in bad shape. So I think it's again having a conviction, a collective conviction, and that it's not about me to do something or to fix something. I can't do it alone. I don't want to do it alone. I think it's hard to say, but if we can kind of give up our power and our ego and work with a common mission, even if it's just part of the work, maybe, you know, maybe it would, you know, at least having something that we do collectively together that's not about me. So I'm not sure, but I would say join, make, form a collective body with a shared mission.
Well, for me, I think collaborating is actually pretty simple. No, it doesn't really entail too much. As long as the willingness is there, collaboration is not a problem. And how long does it take to set up a one-day seminar where you have five speakers? You did it right now, yeah? Yeah? So collaboration, I don't see really as a showstopper. I just think people don't do it enough. I just think that people they talk about it, and that's what I see in Hong Kong. A lot of people talk about many things, but they don't actually get down to doing it. So I think it's it's not just the ideas, because you've got a lot of talent. You saw a lot of good speakers here. People have got a lot to share. People are, very open, very giving.
Yes.
But just there needs to be, a little bit more proactiveness in setting something up. I don't really see collaboration as a problem at all. It's just the willingness and putting the muscle behind it. I think that's really important. And one of my mentors, Jack Canfield, the guy who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul, I worked with him for 2 years, and he set up something called the TLC, which is the Transformational Leadership Council. And he's got all the number one top coaches, like John Gray, Rob Proctor, you name it, they're all part of that council. And every year they do events where they, speak to large audiences to create transformation. It doesn't really take, it's really not that much effort, to be honest.
Very encouraging.
I don't think it is. It's just the willingness to do it.
Yes.
And getting the right people and the right audience. How was it difficult to set this up to them?
I fully agree
with you. Yeah. So it's not difficult at all. But the thing I would like to stress upon in collaboration, and this is based on my personal experience, is that when people join too many free events, what happens is change doesn't happen. Because I see when people join free events, some people would say, well, I feel very depressed. Next year when I see them, they're still depressed. People who are fat are still fat. People who are don't have a job still have a job. So I think when people pay, it's not about being selfish. It's about investing in your own success. When people invest, they're more serious about change. So I believe when you do collaboration, there has to be synergy. There has to be growth for the person who's speaking as well as the audience who's there. Because if people are not committed, they're going to attend the same seminar for the next 20 years and no change is going to happen. So I think we need to be very clear about how we do collaboration. Yes?
Yeah? Once again, I agree completely. However, I'd like to add to that, the collaboration is already happening. It's happening a lot. And maybe because I'm in a privileged position to be connected with like 3,000 people in Hong Kong who are doing stuff all the time. And there are these magical moments. And that was my intention for setting up Heartbeat in the first place. And there are moments where like, today's Tuesday, yesterday was Dragon Boat. So one of my members is collecting 10,000 tons of PET bottles for a big project. And another of my members is collecting ghost nets, scuba diving, and collecting the abandoned fishing nets. So Eric, who's doing the plastic bottle thing, is going to be out at Stanley
And I'm sharing that on my group that he's going to be in Stanley. And then I see that Harry has liked the post and made a comment. And I'm like, oh my goodness, Harry might meet Eric. Wouldn't this be fabulous? So day three, so there's day one, day two, day three. Day three is Eric posts, finally met my hero, Harry, at Stanley. So I can only imagine the thoughts and conversations that are going in the minds of these two men, because I know how like-minded they are. They're both local, they're both really committed, they're both really passionate. So a lot of it has to do with creating that space where people do feel safe to express, to share, to connect, to collaborate. Because when I first started with Heartbeat, and I'm thinking a lot of us in this room are in a similar position, where we're actually bullied for our choices. Like, really? Really? You think that's a good idea? Really? How do you make money from that? Really? You think that's a business? Really? You think Hong Kong? Oh, Hong Kong is such a tough place. Hong Kong is so expensive. Hong Kong is so difficult. People here have no time. People are so busy. Hong Kong has one of the highest percentages of millionaires on the planet. There is no shortage of money and resources in this place. And whenever I start questioning myself, I just remind myself that this is a place of abundance. And if we start, the moment I start thinking I can't afford my rent, that's me thinking in scarcity. When I'm thinking, oh, I need to do this for free because nobody can afford it, ah, that's me thinking in scarcity. When I'm thinking, I'd love to do this platform and do this event and make it free for everyone to come, it's exactly true. People don't invest, they're not invested. I'm reminded of when I was 6 years old and my uncle, who's a bachelor, was in a farming accident and he lost his leg from here down. The only reason he lived is because his neighbor, who went home for lunch, came back and noticed that the swather was still going in the field in the same place. My uncle went into the hospital. Every neighbor in our community, and I mean every single farmer, pulled their combine out of their field and into his, at the risk of their harvest. Because you can only harvest a few weeks in a year, only if the weather's good. They risked their entire harvest to take his crop off. All their wives showed up at my mom's kitchen and fed everyone. That's the power of community. That's collaboration. And that often happens in times of trauma. Sadly, that does generally happen to be the case, that it's trauma. So we're living in this time where we're in low-grade trauma all the time. So it's going to take just a little tipping point, just a little trigger for the switch to be flipped. And in the meantime, I think it's really important for us to, rather than watch the news and go, what the hell is wrong with the world, let's open our notebook and write, oh, what great things happened today. What happened in my life? What happened in my kids' life? What happened in my friend's life? Maybe I was walking down the street and I saw some random thing that looked pretty impressive. So when we start feeding our, and I think that's what you're talking about, the emotional alignment. When I start feeding myself with experiences of positive collaboration, sharing, whatever that is, I start seeing more of that. So I think there's lots of room for collaboration. And whenever we get into that, like earlier there was a conversation about let's start an association. Ooh, but people are only in it for their own good and they're, you know, they don't want to support their, promote their competitors. I worked in an industry association. I worked for the Cable and Satellite Broadcasting Association. I was working with the managing directors and the regional managing directors of all of the CNNs and ESPNs and HBOs and all of the equipment guys. And the one thing I needed to continually remind them, and I think that's relevant here, we are promoting an industry. We are not in competition with each other. We are building our business. We are growing our business. We are expanding an industry. We need to put our competitive thoughts aside for a moment and promote this industry. The first sponsor for the first directory was Pure Yoga. I happened to be publishing a directory at the same time they were opening their new studio. We sat down and within 10 minutes, we were aligned and he had like what do I write the check to? And I asked him for enough just to cover the production costs, so it was an easy deal. I found out after I published that I had 3 or 4 yoga studios in the community who were pissed at me. Oh, they were angry that if I had known you were selling ads to or sponsored by Pure Yoga, we wouldn't have been involved in your directory because they're just the man and the corporate. And I said, listen, the reason Pure Yoga is opening in Hong Kong now is because there is a demand for yoga in Hong Kong, and there's more yoga students in Hong Kong than any of us, any of you, could possibly service. So think of it as Pure Yoga is inviting people who aren't real sure about yoga to try it out, and the students who want to carry it further will find you. They will find your studios. So it's this very narrow line between scarcity and abundance, between me and you, between us and them. And again, it just comes back to we're all in the same game. And whenever we come to that point where we think something's too hard, and I have to ask myself, okay, where's the scarcity sneaking in here again? Because really, Hong Kong, like seriously, step outside. It's like there's more abundance of almost everything that I can even think of here. Yes, there is that dichotomy of, you know, the other end of the scale, but then again, what's light without dark? Kind of doesn't exist, really.
Such a good way that Kinsey sort of wrap up our talk today, and we should be coming from an abundance instead of a scarcity. And 3 of you are coming from, not from local, but because of you coming to Hong Kong, it will create so much opportunities for us. And we would love to have more of you to be in our community and bring in all your, I would say, how do you explain, how do I say it?
Your generosity.
Generosity, yeah. Because I think that is a touch that the local, the Chinese, really need to add these days, because so many things happen, and I think we have shrunk a little bit. And I just hope that with all your support, together we can make Hong Kong stronger once again. Thanks so much.
Dr. Sometimes the chair appears reluctant to say, so I just say it was, I'm so touched. This session is really a touching and moving session. I'm really, really touched, and it's true, I'm very honored to have your presence. No words can express our gratitude. And on behalf of BMSP, I would like to say whatsoever, whensoever, wheresoever, what kind of collaboration, if you need more publicity, more support, more labor power, of course, we will fully show our full support.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming. Thanks, everyone.